The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is about healing. It's also about exploring all the ways that we can make better choices. Today, the latest on foods, nutrients, herbs that can allow us to overcome illness, live a longer life. A special report, an original investigation, which will also be posted today on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, GaryKnoll.com, and my Facebook page. The Gardasil deception. Is Gardasil causing the same virus it's created to prevent? I'll take an in-depth look at human papillomavirus vaccine safety and efficacy. In the process, I will offer up a challenge to the New York Times, their article today, and yesterday on several networks, where they absolutely accepted without question, without doing their own homework, that vaccines in general are safe and effective, and the Gardasil is specifically effective and safe. None of that is true. I'll also be talking about, can we stop the next Fukushima in the United States? And then I'm going to look at the inside the surveillance state, how peaceful activists, many people in this audience, who would just go to a demonstration or call a legislator or sign a petition, you're now being targeted. You're on a watch list. And how did we get here? I'll use information from Nancy Murray and Kay Crockford from Truthout and the ACLU Massachusetts group of why the left and the right are not actively making this a major issue. The rights of the state, meaning the federal government, to interfere in our lives and our choices, and for us making completely lawful and peaceful, nonviolent challenges to the status quo, we are now considered no better than a terrorist. We're put on a terrorist watch list. So that's what we have coming up. Let's go to that which is good news, and that's about healing. And the largest percentage of information each day on my program is about healing. One of the things I remember as a kid when anytime you get a little gum problem, my mother would take clove oil, put it on her finger, massage around my gum, and the pain went away. All the dentists had clove oil where I grew up. Today you don't see that. Too bad, because clove oil is extremely beneficial. I believe it should be in all of our natural medicine cabinets, along with wild oregano oil and cinnamon oil and peppermint oil, especially if you're traveling to another country, or let's say you've just eaten in a restaurant and you think, wow, I don't really feel as good as I should. Maybe it was something that was on the lettuce, or maybe it was on the silverware. There's a lot of ways you can get infected. In fact, last evening, when I went to a movie, I took a break, and I saw a movie I would highly recommend. In fact, in my opinion right now, I would say it's the best film of the year. It's a little film. It's called The Help. And it focuses upon life in Louisiana in the mid-1960s. And a woman who decides who's a native there and one of the local community, that she wants to find out what the position of the help is. In other words, what are their stories? But back then, even talking about equality was a crime in Louisiana, according to the state laws. So the women at great risk told their stories. And the whole movie is about each of their stories and the social environment of what it's like to be a maid down there, raising people's kids where you can't raise your own because you're there all day long and paid terrible wages and given really no rights at all. It is so flawlessly produced, directed, written, and acted that it's rare. It's one of those gems. As a filmmaker myself, as a film historian, I've written several books on the history of Hollywood, specifically Black Hollywood, the history of the Native American, history of the African American in films. I look for the messages in films if they have a message. Boy, does this have some messages. So if there's one film this year you do want to see, it's The Help. Anyhow, I stopped off at a restaurant to get something to eat, and I got a simple vegan dish. And then as I was paying, this person said, "You're Gary Noll?" I said, "Yes." He said, "My mother listens to you all the time. And I think that just watching you, you're a little extreme, aren't you?" I said, "Well, depends upon your perspective. What did you just see that you found excessive?" "Well, you sit down and first you take something out, you spray the table and you wipe it down. And then you took your own utensil out of your pocket. This silverware is fine. And then you didn't drink anything. Isn't that just a little extreme?" I said, "Okay. From your perspective, probably so. But the salad that you're eating there now, how many hands have touched that before it got to your plate? When they're busy downstairs in a restaurant, and having owned 4 restaurants, I can tell you, unless you're there, there's this tendency to pick up something and put it in a bowl instead of washing it. Because when you wash it, you have to do it right. You have to triple wash it, soak and agitate it, then spin it dry. That's not going to happen in most restaurants. People come in at 4 in the morning. They take open the boxes of produce. They cut up the lettuces. They put that lettuce in a sink. They spray it down for a minute and then chop it up and put it into a 55-gallon plastic barrel and label it salad greens. And then the sous chef used that. Now, none of that is thoroughly cleaned. None of it. There's no time for it. Then other people will pick it up with their raw hands, bare hands, and put that up on a table. On that table, you could have cut pork, and which is on the menu here, and chicken, which is on the menu here, and beef on the menu here. All of that can contain E. coli, Listeria, and other contaminants that stay on the cutting surface. The person that does cut your salad, or what goes in your salad, is going to use a knife, and you have no idea whether or not that knife was washed in between things used. I'll bet it wasn't. And how many times does a chef stick their finger in a dish and suck their finger and stick their finger right back in again? I see it all the time. Or they'll use a spoon, and they'll use the same spoon from their saliva, the saliva in their mouth. Now, if you want to go French kiss the chef and taste his saliva, that's fine. I don't. But when you're eating a soup here, how do you know that that saliva from that chef isn't in there? Because I've never seen any chefs except David Boulay that really practice proper hygiene. I'm sure there are, but I've seen too many who don't. And then you have the people who are then putting the salad on your plate and decorating it up. It's not just put. It's put almost always by hand, not people with gloves and not tongs. That is how you got your salad. So do you understand how many pathogens you could have gotten on there? And those sprouts, do you think they wash those sprouts? Because if you wash sprouts, they're going to go limp. They're going to look bad. They're going to go moldy real quick. I'll bet anything those sprouts are not washed. And gee whiz, didn't we just have a lot of people die over in Europe because of contaminated sprouts? You have to know how to wash sprouts and then spin them. And so there could be up to 24 hands touch your produce before you eat it. So that's why I didn't have a salad. I had brown rice. I had sautéed tofu with broccoli and olive oil and mustard and lots of mustard, because mustard is a healing. Mustard is one of nature's most perfect healing foods. Simple. All right, just like cayenne. I like them both together. Now, why did I clean the table? I'll say, look behind us. Do you see that those people just got up? Look at the server. He's going over there taking a dirty towel that's got all of the debris, the spittle from people's mouths, someone who could have sneezed on the table, someone who could have come in here with hepatitis or herpes and anything else, and now that's on the tabletop. And he's wiping that off with the same towel. There's no disinfectant. There's no alcohol. There's no hydrogen peroxide. So I simply bring in a little tiny bottle of hydrogen peroxide mixed with alcohol, and I spread on the table, and I take a napkin, and I wipe it. So the surface area that I'm going to rest my hands, I don't want to get a SARS infection on my arms, just like in the movie theater. I'm going to go to a movie theater in a little bit. I'll enjoy a movie. But you won't see, and nobody will see, that I simply put down a simple paper towel where I'm resting my thing. Is that fanatical? By your concept, yes. By mine, no. It doesn't interfere with what I'm doing. It doesn't make a scene. Now, why didn't I drink water? Two reasons. A, that water, the glass, wasn't sterilized. I didn't see it sterilized. The silverware wasn't sterilized. Now, look at the person putting down the new silverware right at the table beside us. He's putting down the fork and the spoon using his fingers. The same fingers he could have picked his nose or stuck in his mouth or his ears or wiped his eyes or gone to the bathroom and defecated. Now, do you want his defecation? Do you want his feces on your fork? Now, maybe you do. I don't know. Do you live on the east side, west side of the village? You know, what do I know from you? All I'm telling you is you think I'm a fanatic because I brought my own silverware. At least my silverware won't have anyone's feces on it. But I can't promise yours won't. So the water you drank, it's fluoridated water. And also, I don't drink with a meal because it dilutes my digestive acids. So I want full benefit of my digestion. The meal itself was tasty. I enjoyed it. I took my time. I relaxed. And I made no fuss about anything. I asked no one for anything. But you watching this, it kind of puts you in a strange frame of mind that I'm an eccentric. Maybe by your concepts, but it's an even flow. Now ask me the last time I was sick. And I'll tell you, I don't remember. Not because I'm senile. Flu, cold, aches, pains, traveling 100,000 miles a year, going to countries where you would be dead in a week from amoebic dysentery. Why am I not sick? Maybe because I actually practice some simple hygiene principles. The average American touches their mouth over 3,000 times a day. Just imagine what you can spread on doorknobs, on money. Why do I believe clove oil should be in your cabinet? For a couple reasons. First, because clove oil is one of nature's most perfect antioxidants. And it's not that you drink clove oil, it's just that it can protect, and it has a capacity to be measured in cloves, not the oil, but in the actual clove, in high ORAC, which is oxygen radical absorption capacity, meaning it traps free radicals. And in fact, ORAC from cloves soars to over 10 million. It's most of their antioxidants rate in the thousands, so it's just phenomenal. It's in a universe by itself. And producing the oil from the clove buds concentrates the eugenol, the main active ingredient in cloves. And eugenol is anti-inflammatory. Hence, cloves have flavonoids that contribute high antioxidants and are great if you have fungus, skin fungus, if you have candida. Now, that's not taking it as an oil. That's taking it as a clove powder or clove capsule. It's one of the highest sources of manganese, And manganese is important for your metabolism. It contributes to enzymes. It promotes bone strength and adds to close hyoric. And it's just great. Antibacterial, you bet. And antiviral also. Now, another thing you could be taking that could help you is called creatine, C-R-E-A-T-I-N-E. It can fight fatty liver disease. And this is a new study from the Journal of Nutrition. And they found that creatine was extremely important, not just for athletes who are needing it because it maintains muscle mass, and especially for men over 50, it helps maintain muscle mass so you don't get the fat buildup. But, quote, talked about in this study, this is from the University of Newfoundland and the University of São Paulo and the University of Alberta. They all did this work on creatine, and it helps fight fatty liver disease. Well, how many people get fatty liver disease? Most people. Omega-3 fatty acid shows benefits against anxiety. This is good. A daily dose of, quote, 2.5 grams, that's 2,500 milligrams, of the omega-3 fatty acids reduce the symptoms of anxiety by about 20%, according to a study at Ohio State University. And wrapping this up, lemongrass, which I love. I love lemongrass tea. I like to get the lemongrass. I grow lemongrass. And you get the fresh lemongrass. You can walk around, just kind of, you know, chew on it. You get that wonderful flavor. But you can dice it, put it into salads. That's good. You can make a tea from it. But it can also ease muscle cramps. And it's very, very powerful as a pain reliever. And so for that, you just take it in more concentrated form. So it's also called scurvy grass and fever grass and citronella grass, but it's mainly known as lemongrass. And it helps you if you have any form of muscle cramps. So that's good. More potassium, less chance of a stroke. And most people do just the opposite. They have more sodium, which increases your risk of a stroke. So reduce the sodium, increase the potassium. This was a good study, and it was done at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, and this was a meta-analysis, which means they looked at many different studies, and they found that the 10 separate studies showed that the potassium has to be higher in order to prevent the strokes. So between 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day, and the potassium was associated with a reduction in stroke. One last thing here. I've seen people peel fruit. In the South, people peel apples. You shouldn't. Some people don't appreciate white flesh fruit. You should. It's the best type. The latest study shows that you could cut the risk of a stroke by 52% if you had more white flesh fruit. Now, this was a Dutch study of 20,000 heart disease-free adults who were averaging 41 years of age. And for 10 years, they followed these people, and they found that the flavonoid quercetin, the one I tell you to take every single day, was better than green, orange, yellow, and red and purple fruits for reducing likelihood of strokes. Quote, to prevent strokes, it's useful to consume considerably larger amounts of white fruit and vegetables. And this is from the Wageningen University. For example, eating an apple a day is an easy way to increase white fruit and vegetable intake. However, other fruits and vegetables can also be protective. Onions, I've always said, if you want to prevent a heart attack and a stroke, a half an onion a day, a sweet onion, raw, that's how you do it. And bananas, cauliflower, chicory, cucumber, all are foods in the white flesh category. And big reduction in stroke. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Your time is up. You took a sip. from the devil's cut. You broke my heart. There's no way back. Move right out of here, baby. Go pack your bags. Just who do you think you are? Stop acting like some kind of star.
Two engineering students were biking across the university campus when one said, "Where'd you get such a great bike?" The second engineer replied, "Well, I was walking along yesterday, minding my own business, the geek that I am, when a beautiful woman rode up on this bike, threw it to the ground, took all of her clothes, and said, 'Take what you want.'" The first engineer nodded approvingly and said, "Good choice. The clothes probably wouldn't have fit anyhow." Nice to have you with us today. I'm Gary Nall in our studio in New York City. And for all of you out there who just, especially some of the younger people who think you're so hip because you're so green conscious, okay, good. Then it's a green thing, isn't it? Well, there were also days when it was green, too. In the line at the store, the cashier told an older woman that she should bring in her own grocery bags because plastic bags weren't good for the environment. The woman apologized to him, explaining, "We didn't have the green thing back in my day." The clerk responded, "Well, that's our problem today. Your generation did not care enough to save our environment. You were not green conscious. You, the baby boomers, and all the senior citizens." "Okay," the woman says, "fair enough. Our generation didn't have the green thing in its day. Back then, we returned milk bottles, soda bottles, and beer bottles to the store. The store sent them back to the plant to be washed and sterilized and refilled, so it could be used again, the same bottle over and over again. They really were into kind of a different type of recycling. But we didn't have the green thing back in our day. We walked upstairs because we didn't have an escalator in every store and office building. We walked to the grocery store, and we didn't climb into a 300-horsepower machine every time we had to go two blocks." But she was right. We didn't have the green thing in our day. Back then, we washed the baby's diapers because we didn't have the throwaway kind. We dried clothes on a line, not in an energy-gobbling machine burning up 220 volts. We used wind and solar power. Really, it dries the clothes, makes them smell nice, too. Kids got hand-me-down clothes from their brothers or sisters, not always brand-name clothes. But that old lady's right. We didn't have the green thing back in our day. Back then, we had one TV or radio in the house, not a TV in every room, and the TV had a small screen the size of a handkerchief, not a screen the size of the state of Montana. In the kitchen, we blended and stirred by hand because we didn't have electric machines to do everything for us. When we packaged a fragile item to send in the mail, we used wadded-up old newspapers to cushion it, not styrofoam or plastic bubble wrap. Back then, we didn't fire up an engine and burn gasoline just to cut the lawn. We used a push mower that ran on human power. We exercised by working so we didn't need to go to the health club to run on a treadmill that operates on electricity. But she's right, we didn't have the green thing back then. We drank from a fountain when we were thirsty instead of using a cup or plastic bottle every time we had to drink water. We refilled writing pens with ink instead of buying a new pen, and we replaced the razor blades with a razor instead of throwing away the whole razor just because the blade got dull. But we didn't have that green thing back then. Back then, people took the streetcar or bus. Kids rode their bikes to school or walked instead of turning their moms into 24-hour taxi service. We had our electrical outlet in a room, not an entire bank of sockets to power a dozen appliances. We didn't need a computerized gadget to receive a single beam from a satellite 2,000 miles out in space in order to find the nearest pizza joint. But isn't it sad that current generation laments how wasteful we older people are just because we didn't have that green thing back then? Yeah. I'm Gary Nall. We have a lot of issues to cover today. I don't have a guest today because I want to spend more time having you have a chance to talk about some important issues. I'm going to give you something to talk about in a moment with a commentary. I'm going to do an original commentary, which is a shout out to those of you who would like to let the New York Times, MSNBC, and Current ask them before you attack Michelle Bachmann, and this is not for me about Bachmann, because she and I are not on the same side of any of these issues, but rather it's about when she did say in the debate that a woman came up to her later and said that after the Gardasil vaccine, her child had problems, including retardation, that she was hammered for that. All right? Set aside that it's Michelle Bachmann. Say it's anyone suggesting that a vaccine has safety issues and efficacy issues. You'll still get hammered by the same people. And I'm going to do a commentary in a moment, and then I'm going to share information you did not know about this. But first, here is a thought for you. This is from Alternet. It's from Nancy Murray and Cade Crockford. I'll quote a small amount of it. It's a rather long article. And the title of the article is Inside the Surveillance State, How Peaceful Activists, like you and I, get swept up into terrorist watch lists. And once you're in those watch lists, you cannot get out. Talks about, we learn, quote, that there was apparently no easy way to get off the FBI's security index. Even after the criteria for fitting the profile of a subversive were revised, the names of people who no longer fit the definition remained on IBM punch cards and were retained in field offices as potential threats. A card would only be destroyed, quote, if the subject agreed to become an FBI informant. And so hence, no matter how innocent you were of anything, unless you wanted to become an informant, you stayed on lists. The FBI at one point had only 432,000 files on Americans listed as subversive individuals or groups. And now it's gone up to over 1.1 billion files. But there's not just one file. Today we have, quote, by any means necessary, we have mindset is harnessed to a national surveillance industrial complex that pumps out 50,000 intelligence reports every 24 hours into the FBI's terror screening database, which contains over a million names, and it is error-ridden. The so-called master list is extremely unreliable. And given the legion of local, state, and federal agents seeking people to put on terrorist activity, anyone who holds any view that is considered radical goes on to a suspicious activity report, a SAR, and the virtually unchecked ability of FBI operatives to spy on groups without suspicion of wrongdoing. It is not necessary that the same kind of groups that were infiltrated and spied on by the FBI, NASA, CIA, and Department of Defense under COINTELPRO are featuring in Joint Terrorism Task Force Investigations and Fusion Center database. The secrecy surrounding the national security matters and the blurred jurisdictions that this occurs is mind-boggling. And then it goes on to talk about all the different agencies, dozens of agencies, and private corporations that are set up to do nothing more than spy on people. Now, who are they spying on? Well, they're spying on anyone who is for Ron Paul. Did you know that, Ron Paul supporters? You're all on a terrorist watch list. Okay? So, Ron Paul, you should be aware, and I don't think you are aware, because you're a constitutional contrarian. There are things you focus on, things clearly you don't. But your group and your mindset is such a threat, and as it should be. After all, you want to get us out of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and stop nation building and close those bases and close the Federal Reserve. You think anyone in power at the Federal Reserve banks or other places in the military industrial complex might be threatened by what you could possibly do if you had any popularity? Well, how about everyone in the environmental movement? Yeah, all environmental movement groups. How about any peace group? Yeah, any peace group. So if you show up and protest America's actions, and then I start reading, and it goes on and on and on about everyone, not just anti-war, but almost all. There were 13,000 reports by dozens on anti-war activity. So if you write letters, if you have a blog, if you show up, all suddenly someone's going to have you on the list. So all this is going on. Almost anything that would challenge any of the powers that be, you're on a watch list. So that is what's going on every single moment of every single day. And where is it on anyone's map that this is an issue, that we're losing our freedoms? It's not. And once you're on these lists, you don't get off. And is anyone talking about this? Has any journalist told the President of the United States, you're a constitutional lawyer, you have not allowed habeas corpus to be reintroduced, you supported FISA, you're the anti-constitutionalist constitutional professor? But then again, he's not being challenged, is he? Your thoughts about America becoming a police state. We are becoming East Germany in the 1950s. All right? I can name you the corporations. We can show you the contracts. We can show you the $59 billion a year that they're spending to try to figure out if you're a commie today? No, commies. Yeah, Glenn Beck still likes communists as a target. But if you're progressive, if you're liberal, if you're speaking out, if you're challenging, then you end up on a list. Enemy of the state. All right? Our number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And also, for those of you who care about fracking, hydrofracking in New York State and want to stop it, please call Governor Cuomo and urge him in a polite and diplomatic way, please ban hydrofracking. We have more than enough information to show you that everything you've been told by the pro-frackers are wrong. First, I'm telling you that the entire fracking business is a scam. It is creating an artificial energy bubble. You're not going to get enough of the actual gas out of this hydrofracking process to justify the cost, so people think they're going to be making a lot of money and selling other people getting into these fracking syndicates, which are everywhere. You're going to get creamed. So I'm just telling you now, it's all a bubble. But also, it's destructive. At times when Texas is running out of water, and I predict that within the next 5 years, at least two of the major cities in Texas will have to start moving its population because there won't be enough water in the reserve use for those cities. And that's going to happen across the United States. You literally see some smaller, medium-sized, and a few large cities having to go through the crisis of first rationing and then stopping people from moving in and then closing down large supplies. Well, you get nothing that uses as much water as nuclear power plants and their coolers and hydrofracking. So New York State is also going through, parts of the state are going through severe drought. So please call Governor Cuomo at 866-961-3208. 866-961-3208 and tell him you're against hydrofracking. I am doing a special report on it. I will send him the report that for every argument he is being told by his pro-fracking lobbyists, I will give him a counter-argument that they are wrong. So at least he has that information. Next up, before I go to your calls here, and we're going to get your calls up in a moment, next week is a big week. First, we have on September 21st, which is next Wednesday evening, starting at 5 p.m., for those of you who have not seen, and a lot of you did because all 14 showings were sold out of Knocking on the Devil's Door, our Deadly Nuclear Legacy, we will have a screening at the Ethical Culture Center at 5 to 6:30. At 7 p.m., we will have a group coming from Fukushima, including the Ralph Nader of Japan, sharing lots of new information about what we have not been told and what the Japanese government has tried to hide about the truth about how bad Fukushima is now and will be in the future for millions, tens of millions of Japanese, including children of Fukushima. They'll be coming, making a presentation, but so will Vandana Shiva from India and Greg Palast and Harvey Wasserman. We have a lot of people who are going to be there. Then, following that, there will be the world premiere, first time that you'll have a chance to see it together, of Death by Medicine. It played to qualify in two theaters, but it wasn't announced. This is a one-night, wonderful get-together to watch this important film. Also, 40 of the finest holistic practitioners have already signed up. Dentists, psychologists, psychiatrists, chelation experts, homeopaths, nurses, to be there also. And I want to at least acknowledge those who are within the health community. Plus, people all over the world can watch it over the Internet. So you can watch this whole thing, any part of it you want, over the Internet. So that's going to happen. So I'm very happy about that. Now, right now, all seats are taken. We have no seats. So if anything opens up, I'll let you know on Monday show. But right now, they're filled. But it's exciting. The next night, I'm going to do a dance. This is going to be a celebration dance. I want to have a great evening with everyone. So if you have not been to a dance, if you want to come and dance and enjoy a wonderful green environment, by the way, it's a green nightclub. It's from 7 till 11 that we'll be dancing. I'm mixing the music. It's going to be disco. It's going to be a lot of fun. We haven't done one in 2 years. I used to do one, two a year, but I haven't because I've been so busy. And people said, when are you going to do a next dance? Okay, going to do a dance. All right? And it's free. It's free. It's my way and the station's way of saying thank you for all of your support. And so it's just a night to celebrate. Have fun. All right? I'm going to be signing books for the first hour and then dancing. So I look forward to having you come and join us. It's free, no charge. Everyone's invited. And call, let us know, because the club does not want us overbooking. I don't want to have people waiting outside because they can't get in because the club has limits. So call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065 for the dance party. But don't call about, the other one is filled up, both showings are filled up, the whole evening is filled up. But there's always people that will know show. There is always going to be a certain percentage of people that just can't make it. And so we're going to have a will call, like in Broadway theaters. You know, you'll go there, and if there are seats available, you can go in. Now, that said, in a moment, I'm going to go to a special investigative report. I will post this. Hopefully, you'll use this. But joining me in studio is Valerie. I just saw Valerie come in. Hi, Val.
Hi, Gary. So I just wanted to come in and congratulate you. We found out this morning that you won yet another Best Documentary Award for Death by Medicine, and this is the Acolyte International Film Competition, and they do awards to filmmakers and videographers who they feel are fresh voices and outstanding productions, and you won the Best Documentary there in California. And this brings us to over 50 festivals that Death by Medicine has won, has been selected as an official selection. And some of the best documentary awards that you've won to date are the World Fest Houston, the Vancouver, Canada, the official Best of Fest, Alaska International Film Festival Best Documentary, Canadian Film Festival, Hoboken International Film Festival Best Documentary and Best Director, and the Los Angeles International Underground Film Best Director, Best
I film. Heard from someone, though I didn't have a chance to verify it, that last night at a big film festival in Boston, they did a whole panel on death by medicine. I didn't know anything about it. Did you know anything about it?
Yeah, this is great. They organized themselves, these holistic doctors, chiropractors, different people, to have a panel to talk about the film and talk about what's happening in medicine today. So that's exciting. They're out there organizing without us even
good.
Knowing.
Good. Well, this is the film people are going to have a chance to see.
It's a great film.
Let's see, 8:30. Is when that will start, 8:30 to 10 on Wednesday. Thank you, Val.
Thank you.
And now a few people and their comments, and I'll go to the commentary. Let's say hello to John. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yes, Gary? Hello?
Yes. Go ahead, John.
Yes. Listen, I went on the Internet and looked up, I wanted to see which, as far as our office buildings, what was the longest inferno? And I heard of a building in Venezuela, I believe, that was the whole entire building was on flames for, like, I guess 2 days, the steel frame building, and it didn't fall. Now, when I looked at September 11th and building number 7, which you saw that there were no, it wasn't an inferno, just a few fires. And then on top of that, building number 7 was one of the strongest buildings built in the world at that time. 100% there's no doubt that building number 7 came down by controlled demolition, since there's all the methods to bring a building like that down except for controlled demolition. And I cannot understand why the citizens in this republic are not calling for, or in their minds, the execution of these individual people in power who brought that about.
Okay, John, we have to look at this from possibly a little different perspective, if you would, please. I'm against capital punishment. I do not believe in that type of violence. What I do believe in is justice. And if you listen to a really good progressive show, she's one of the best, Bonnie Faulkner, on Guns and Butter, on WBAI, she's first rate. And she had on Kevin Ryan talking about how could you have gotten thermitic material into the building. And it was a brilliant discussion. You will not hear that on other programs. You have George Galloway. You have Ian McMasters. You have a lot of people, Hugh Hamilton and Robert Knight. You have people now in non-commercial radio who have the courage, the strength of character, not to be compromised by politics, but rather look for the truth. And so there's a whole 9/11 truth movement. It is not as if there's no one doing this. Millions of people no longer believe the official version. On Monday evening, on Progressive Radio Network, I will lead a three-hour discussion, as it is right now. It'll be a three-hour discussion, and I'm going to set it up as if this were an inquest. I will have jurists, and I will have experts, and each person will be held accountable to only offer information about what was wrong with the official report. And therefore, the information we've already told them must be of a quality to withstand cross-examination forensically in a court of law. So we're not going to have wild-eyed speculation. We're going to have hard data. But that hard data alone will give us the answers that you're looking for in others. It is a beginning. But there are many people looking for the truth. But I thank you, John, for yours. Brad, you're on next, please.
Yes, hello, Gary.
Yes.
Gary, I noticed a while ago, several years back, so many different factions of police entities. For example, the MTA started doing regular policing far away from the train tracks or anything itself. And I noticed them hunting down some guy in the local park in Brentwood for having sold a bag of marijuana. Now, maybe he did that on the train or not, and I don't know, but they were far away from the tracks, and it just seems like it's just policing for the sake of policing, not policing to protect the railroad.
But we have that everywhere. We have bureaucracies who exist for no other reason than to support the people in the bureaucracy. Our trouble in our society is the forensic examination. We create monolithic bureaucracies at the local, state, and federal level without asking, what are you doing that actually helps us be a better society, improves the quality of our lives, our environment, protects us from known or suspected danger. And if we looked honestly, we would see that the vast majority of individuals working in these environments are non-productive to a common outcome, and yet they've taken on a power that is so strong, and they manipulate that power so effectively, using fear as their catalyst to maintain their power, that we don't have any way effectively in our society of deconstructing once we've constructed. So be very careful about what you construct without insight and without due diligence, because it will continue to live forever, and we will continue to have our lives adversely affected paying for these monstrosities. Thank you very much, Brad. And we have become a police state. We don't have enough peacekeepers in the world, but we have an awful lot of armed people claim to be peacekeepers. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's go inside and say hello to... Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary. A professor who has emailed in, he's been listening for 7 years. He wants to say that he really enjoys the part of the program that you do that deals with new insights. And in the last year alone, he's been teaching his students three concepts he's learned from the show. And he says it's been absolutely cathartic to him. The first is that we never know the truth of our choices till we reach the destination. And so, therefore, we should always look up and ahead to the likely outcome of the choice we're about to make, so that we know the truth of the choice in the moment that we make them. He said that this singular insight has been more important to him than anything that he has learned in all these years at school and as a professor. The second is what we think and the energy that we share with another person becomes our DNA. Therefore, synchronization of this energy is the ultimate compatibility factor. He says that this literally could be the most important way of changing how we teach in high schools, college and graduate courses. He's never heard this concept before. And finally, you've been discussing rational economics versus behavioral economics. And recently on KPFK, you talked about how irrational beliefs create exuberant bubbles. He says, again, he's never heard this term before, and he really agrees with your view that we believe that we are conscious of the values in all our choices, but we're terrified of challenging them now. And now he teaches how the importance of every choice should be weighed on the side of ethics and morality, not merely on efficiency and productivity. As a result, and including with your life energies model, he believes he is making the most important contribution to the students and their development than ever before, and he really sees it in them.
Well, that's nice. Well, thank him.
Yes.
Now, to this report. A recent report on Gardasil points to a frightening cover-up by Merck and the American medical authorities regarding the harmful nature of the popular human papillomavirus vaccine. The controversy stems from one small phrase that appeared on the package insert of Merck's Gardasil vaccine since it hit the market in 2006. It reads, quote, Gardasil is not a live virus vaccine. It contains no viral DNA and is therefore incapable of causing infection, unquote. This assertion was given a stamp of approval by the Food and Drug Administration and backed by major medical institutions, including Health Canada and the World Health Organization. The results of one recent study commissioned by the vaccine safety organization SaneVax provide compelling evidence that the Gardasil vaccine does, in fact, contain dangerous live strains of the human papillomavirus. The study examined the contents of 13 vials of Gardasil from different countries around the world, including the United States. It was found that 100% of the vaccines probed were contaminated with genetically modified human papillomavirus and DNA. In other words, live strains of the human papillomavirus capable of infecting human beings with human papillomavirus is what these young women were receiving, and men. These findings strongly suggest that the Gardasil vaccine has been transmitting the human papillomavirus to an untold number of young boys and girls all over the world and causing the very condition it was designed to prevent. Also alarming is the deleterious effect that recombinant DNA in transmuscular vaccines can have on the body. Studies have linked laboratory-created virus strains to serious health disorders, including neurological disorders and malignant tumors. The story is corroborated by my guest yesterday, Cindy Bevington, a multi-award-winning investigative journalist who has done extensive research into Gardasil, who noted in an interview with me that Merck quietly went about in removing the information from their package insert, which stated Gardasil did not contain live strains of human papillomavirus. Neither Merck nor the FDA has responded to calls by the public to account for this shocking revelation. Now, such silence from our medical institutions on the issue of vaccine safety has become the norm in recent years. This particularly applies to the controversy over vaccines being linked to autism. Despite our federal health authorities repeatedly denying any causal relationship between vaccines and autism, the evidence is irrefutable that U.S. government has implicitly acknowledged such a link exists. The government's vaccine injury compensation program has been paying out sums of money to the families of autistic children for more than 20 years. In a peer-reviewed study published in the PACE Environmental Law Review, investigators found that 83 cases filed with the Vaccine and Injury Compensation Program, families were given monetary compensation of millions of dollars each after their child presented symptoms of autism. In 21 of these cases, the federal court documents even contain the words, quote, autism or autism-like symptoms. So it's not speculation. It is in a matter of what the court has actually agreed to state and what is agreed to reimburse for it. And during the Republican candidate presidential debate held on Monday night, Texas Governor Rick Perry was blasted by fellow presidential candidate and Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann for his attempt to institute mandatory human papillomavirus Gardasil vaccinations for young girls in 2007. Bachmann criticized Perry's stance, saying it could have endangered the lives of girls with a, quote, potentially dangerous drug, with, quote, potentially dangerous side effects that could cause mental retardation. Following the debate, members of the media and medical establishment moved quickly to attack Bachmann for her comments. Talking heads appeared on all the major news networks, and dozens of articles appeared in the press dismissing the congresswoman's statements as false. These news outlets parroted the claim by national health agencies such as the CDC that Gardasil is a safe and effective means of preventing human papillomavirus and cervical cancer. Bachmann has already begun to back away from her comments, admitting that she is not an expert on vaccines and has no, quote, no idea of Gardasil's effects. This incident is yet another example of how the media has chosen to blindly follow the dubious claims of government authorities without carrying out an independent and thorough investigation of the facts. Now, I want to highlight actual and only actual facts and figures, and these I've obtained from the federal health agencies themselves. They reveal the following. Gardasil is both dangerous and ineffective and should not be used by anyone under any conditions. First, let's look at Gardasil's approval. It was flawed from the start. The Gardasil vaccine has been the subject of criticisms since it was approved 5 years ago. The vaccine purportedly prevents the sexually transmitted human papillomavirus and cervical cancer. Originally intended only for girls, it was approved for boys in 2009. According to CDC, Gardasil can be administered to girls and boys starting at 9 years of age. Before being approved, Gardasil was tested on fewer than 1,200 girls. The trials assessing Gardasil's safety and effectiveness that led to the vaccine being approved were sorely lacking in good science. From the outset, the standards for determining the vaccine's safety and effectiveness were lowered when the FDA fast-tracked the approval process. Researchers monitored the frequency of adverse reactions in test subjects taking Gardasil with a placebo group. One glaring problem with the trials was that the placebo provided was laced with aluminum, a toxic material known to promote inflammation and neurological disorders. Accordingly, the adverse events associated with Gardasil did not appear as severe when compared to those adverse events caused by the harmful injections given into the placebo group. Another major flaw in Merck's clinical trials was the number of girls tested who elected to take the prescription 3 doses of the vaccine. Only 27% of the girls tested were actually given all 3 vaccines. This has led many to speculate that numerous girls, particularly in the trials, experienced bad reactions to Gardasil and did not wish to continue. One remarkable oversight in the trial was that no girls under the age of 15 participated. The vast majority of girls being given the vaccine now are younger than 15. In fact, they're starting at 9. Despite being clearly subjective, the clinical trials only managed to demonstrate that Gardasil could, in some cases, prevent certain types of cervical lesions that could potentially have led to cancer of the cervix. For those stations around the country that are tuning off, I thank you for listening. For the rest, you can continue listening to my discussion to the top of the hour on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. In an article printed in the New York Times on Friday, September 16, 2011, entitled, With Stakes for Bachmann Higher Now, Her Words Get in the Way, writer Tripp Gabriel asserts that Michelle Bachmann's comments concerning the dangers of Gardasil are simply a manifestation of her, quote, penchant for exaggeration. The article fails to reference the comprehensive body of research and documentation which proves that Bachmann was far from overstating the facts. FDA documents obtained by Judicial Watch reveal that within a 16-month period, there were 16 deaths, 789 series reports, and 239 cases of permanent disability resulting from the vaccine. As of April of this year, over 20,000 adverse events and 90 deaths have been reported to the government's vaccine adverse reporting system. in connection with the vaccine. It is estimated that only 1% to 10% of all adverse reactions are reported to this agency, compared with reports of adverse reactions to the meningococcal vaccine. 30 times as many deaths and serious events from Gardasil are reported to federal health authorities. Other known reactions to Gardasil include the loss of coordination, rashes, vomiting, blood clots, seizures, and fainting. Numerous reports to the National Vaccine Information Center detail how several girls passed out within minutes of being vaccinated. The vaccine reporting agency has received several reports of school-aged girls developing the Guillain-Barré syndrome after receiving the Gardasil vaccine. And this is an incurable, life-threatening autoimmune and neurological disorder that causes a loss of muscle control and paralysis throughout the body. In a report to the National Vaccine Information Center, the mother of a 14-year-old girl named Cassie chronicled her daughter's horrific reaction to Gardasil, stating the following, quote, "After receiving the first Gardasil shot, she started experiencing severe headaches and nosebleeds, which continued after the second shot and increased in severity and added to her extreme fatigue. After seeing our family physician twice and still not connecting her health problems to Gardasil, Casey received the third Gardasil shot as well as other vaccines. That's when everything fell apart. The nosebleeds were severe and the headaches at times so bad she could not hold her head up. This fatigue left her unable to move, and then the flu-like symptoms and severe abdominal pain hit her. Since receiving her third Gardasil shot, Cassie has been hospitalized 4 times. She has been diagnosed with pancreatitis, gastrointestinal disorders, and has pneumonia 3 times. She is also suffering from various other symptoms, including extreme nausea, vomiting after having a central line put in, and being on TPN and liquids. She has fatigue, dizziness, headaches, hypersensitivity to light and sound, blurred vision, lactation, seizure-like activity, tingling and numbness in legs, and severe pain in her abdomen. Because these reports are not double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized studies, our medical institutions make the claim that these are not definitively linked to the vaccine. The CDC continues to ignore the growing number of reports detailing terrible reactions to Gardasil. These reports are accessible to the public on medalerts.org. In a presentation before the American Academy of Neurology, scientists from the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey reproduced alarming evidence of a connection between the human papillomavirus and several serious syndromes. The researchers discovered that girls were up to 600% more likely to develop GBS in the 6 weeks following injections of Gardasil. The dangers associated with Gardasil extend to infants. Despite the claim by Merck that, quote, it is not known whether vaccine antigens or antibodies induced by the vaccine are excreted in human milk, unquote, an internal study carried out by the company concluded that children of nursing mothers who received the vaccine showed a 300% increase in acute respiratory conditions compared to the placebo group. The effectiveness of Gardasil in preventing human papillomavirus and cervical cancer remains unproven. Dr. Diane Harper, who I interviewed on this program, worked as a consultant to Merck and was responsible for overseeing trials evaluating the safety and efficacy of Gardasil. After helping it get approved, Dr. Harper began publicly question the use of the vaccine. She has claimed that the damaging side effects of Gardasil may not be worth the risk and that additional studies should be undertaken to prove the vaccine safety and effectiveness. She has also expressed her disapproval over very young children receiving the vaccine. Because 11-year-old girls do not get cervical cancer, Dr. Harper asserted that the only party that stands to benefit from the human papilloma vaccination of young girls is Merck, the manufacturer. In one case involving a child who developed Lou Gehrig's disease after being vaccinated, Dr. Harper posited that Gardasil was the likely cause. In addition, Dr. Harper has brought attention to the fact that a truly effective human papillomavirus vaccine would need to remain effective for 15 years to prevent cervical cancer in women, and also that we would have to vaccinate every single 11-year-old girl in the United States for the next 60 years to have any measurable effect on rates of cervical cancer. The truth is that no proof exists that shows Gardasil as effective at preventing cancer in the long term. A study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2007 plainly demonstrates the ineffective nature of Gardasil in women with human papillomavirus. The authors conclude that the Gardasil vaccination offered no benefit to women recovering from human papillomavirus during a 12-month period. On the contrary, the authors found that injections of Gardasil frequently increased the strains of human papillomavirus found in women, a point that supports the aforementioned study results released by the same VAX. The authors conclude that they, quote, see no reason to believe that there is therapeutic benefit of the vaccine elsewhere because the biological effect of vaccination among already infected women is not expected to vary by population, unquote. In conclusion, Gardasil was designed to protect against two of over 150 strains of human papillomavirus that could lead to cervical cancer. Another study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which tested American women for human papillomavirus, revealed that only about 3% of those tested were infected with the strain against which Gardasil could protect. Given the high rate of recovery from people with human papillomavirus, the widespread use of the vaccine is highly suspect. Even the National Cancer Institute has stated that, quote, the great majority of high-risk human papillomavirus infections go away on their own and do not cause cancer. I repeat, quote, the National Cancer Institute has stated the great majority of high-risk human papillomavirus infections go away on their own and do not cause cancer. In fact, 90% of all cases of human papillomavirus disappear within 2 years. Cervical cancer is nearly 100% curable when detected early. According to data from the CDC, there were no deaths from cervical cancer in females below the age of 21 in a four-year period, 2003-2007. Advances in medicine, regular use of pap smears to detect cancer have helped decrease the incidence of cervical cancer in the United States by over 50% since the 1970s. Examining health data from Finland and the UK, Dr. Harper and her colleagues concluded that human papillomavirus vaccinations actually give a false sense of security to many young women and girls who in turn opt out of regular pap smear tests. According to Dr. Harper, this trend has resulted in exponential increases in rates of human papillomavirus. I'm Gary Knoll, and all the scientific citations to support my special report are online at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good day.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tavenfeld.